Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you'd like to make during this broadcast, you'll have to first email me at bonk@aol.com and let me know your number so that I'll pick it up when you call in. Otherwise, feel free to email me questions that I could ask our guest. Before I introduce my special guest for tonight, I just want to make a few short announcements. First, we are only 6 weekends away from our Houston Healing Weekend. I'm really excited. That I can't believe it's coming up on us so fast. And this is a weekend in Houston, Texas, where women come together to validate each other, to give support to each other, and to tell their stories, because it's a group of women who will listen and know exactly how you feel. You don't even have to say a word, and we all understand. But going to a healing weekend can definitely make a difference in your path to gay husband recovery. It's a really good starting point. There are women at all different levels of their journey, starting, middle, ending. And we have speakers, and we have, you know, somebody from our Adult Children of Gay Fathers group is going to do a seminar for us, and Janine Finelli, who will do a health seminar for us. So there's a lot of really good stuff going on that will help you towards your healing. So if you're interested in the weekend, please write to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you the information. Just want to remind people that we have support chat 3 times a week for women who need somebody to reach out to, that, you know, you're welcome to come. Write to me at bonk@aol, and I'll send you directions for signing up for that. And for those of you who are signed up for our support chats, this is just a reminder that you need to update your Java program. If you need help with that, write to me. Also, I want to remind people that we have our Adult Children of Gay Fathers support group every Wednesday evening. So if you have a child over 18 years old, all the way up to in their 40s, feel free to send them my way, and I'll hook them up with that support. And also, if you're not getting my newsletter and you'd like to be on my monthly newsletter list, please write to me at bonk@aol.com. Tonight, we have a special guest who's coming back to us, because I'd like her to come back as much as she can. This is Mary Ann Glynn from New Jersey. Mary Ann, welcome back.
Thank you, Bonnie. Hello, all.
And yes, I'm really excited you're back because you cover a subject that affects so many of our women. And for those of you who have heard Mary Ann before and commented on how great you think she is, or for those of you who haven't been introduced to her before, you can find her information on my website at gayhusbands.com. Over to the links on the right-hand side, you'll find her website, which is a wonderful website that we'll talk about in a few minutes. So, Mary Ann, as I said, welcome back to the show. And why I'm so excited to have you, it seems as more and more time goes by, women write to me constantly about this whole concept of post-traumatic stress, which is something that you really are very knowledgeable about. And maybe could you talk a little bit about what that definition means for women?
Yes. Post-traumatic stress, and I'm sure everyone could relate to it right away, means when something happens that is so threatening to you, either physically or psychologically, that it causes a traumatic shock. And what that means is that it's your brain doesn't even know what to do with it. It's so impacting, and it kind of gets fragmented in the brain and stored in very strange ways, so that when it keeps coming back in different ways rather than true normal remembering, like things like flashbacks, dreams, disrupted sleep, intrusive thoughts, you know, and you just can't get this person or this incident out of your mind, and it just keeps going round and round and round. And it can go on for, it can kind of reverberate in your system. It actually changes the whole kind of neuro imprint on your brain to some extent. So it takes a long time to heal from, maybe at least a year, I'd say, from the time it happens, maybe longer. you know, it's something that just you can't heal easily from. It's a very gradual process and a long process. I'm sure people can relate to the initial
question.
Shock.
Mm-hmm. Right. But a lot of my women who write to me who bring up this issue of post-traumatic stress, they write to me feeling somewhat guilty that they're even mm-hmm. using that terminology. Because
really?
I think that in the past, yes, that post-traumatic stress was usually identified as something that came about from when people go into the military, when they're in mm-hmm. battle, when they're in a war, and they felt that, you know, they were really embarrassed to even say that terminology applied to them because they thought it was belittling to people who've been through real wars. But,
uh-huh.
I said it has nothing to do with it because every battle, regardless of how it's fought or how you struggle, is a validated battle. I mean, you don't have to feel embarrassed by using that terminology. Is that correct?
Yeah, and it also applies to any, if you were mugged or if you got in a car accident or anything that caused a momentary threat to your life would cause post-traumatic stress reaction. It might not be severe as one that was having a war, but you would still have the same symptoms. But it also can happen if it feels almost like an annihilation of your psyche in a sense. It's hard to explain, but I think everyone has gone through it. Because if something happens in your life that's so shocking, it rips almost like the ground out from underneath your feet. It almost rips out the foundation of who you are. Your whole life kind of shatters. And that's what I mean by psychological post-traumatic stress. And it
mm-hmm.
has the exact same symptoms of somebody who's just come back from a war, believe it or not, you know.
Now, with post-traumatic stress, would you say that this is something that can return and reoccur?
Well,
over the years.
Yeah. Well, you can always have a flashback from it. At the beginning, you get a lot more of these triggers or flashbacks. Do you think people know what that is? A flashback would be like, okay, let's say that you found that your husband was watching gay porn, right? That would be
mm-hmm.
a traumatic experience if it's the first time it happened, right? And
Correct.
It would really confuse you and just kind of shatter your whole expectation. Your sense of safety would probably be gone after that. You'd start to become very maybe suspicious or worried or mistrustful, but you'd probably try to put it away and not think about it or explain it away. But then
mm-hmm.
the next time you see your husband on the computer, even though he might be doing something very benign, you might get that same flashback of the time when you first saw that.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you'd re-experience it. You'd go into kind of a panic. Your heart would start pounding. You might get sweaty, panicky, and believe in that moment that something bad was happening, even though it wasn't. That's what a flashback is.
One of the
that
important things
familiar?
That I think people should, it does. And I
yeah,
think that
okay.
what women need to realize about you and your services is that it's not just a matter of the post-traumatic stress that many women, I do believe, are suffering with, but you really work so well with women who are in what we call destructive relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I've started, in response to the great out there, epidemic of bad people, of bad relationships, started
mm-hmm.
a live group in New Jersey that meets in North Central New Jersey twice a month, and an online group that meets twice a month. And they meet on my website, which is www.destructiverelationshipshelp.com. I guess that you have that as a link on your website. So if anyone
yes,
is
I
interested
do.
In joining that group, please feel free. People need support more than anything,
mm-hmm.
as you know, to get through this. It's probably the most important thing.
I agree with you because, you know, you always feel so isolated and alone. And
yeah.
I really do tell women, and I don't know if you necessarily agree with me or not, but my theory is that when you go into a relationship with someone who's either a narcissist, a sociopath, or a psychopath, which many of us have husbands or ex-husbands who are in this situation, these are usually very destructive relationships and marriages. And then you get out of them, and you head towards the same thing again. And I really
I read that article. I forget the person's name that was on your website who went from out of the relationship with a gay man right into a relationship with a very abusive man.
And it's very common. And I tell women, you know, you come out broken from these relationships. You have to first learn who you are. You know, I think that many of us were broken before we went into these relationships, and men, you know, who are predators, they seek out women who are broken because they like to control or break you further, or because we're the nurturers and the caretakers of the world, and we're always trying to fix things because we can't fix ourselves, so we're always looking to fix everything around us.
Yeah,
and it's so easy to fall back to this, right?
Yeah,
they sense
it.
They absolutely do. And that's why I say with recovery out of any bad relationship, you know, not only with a gay husband, with any kind of sociopath or narcissist, you know, it's like any other kind of recovery. You really should give yourself a solid year of trying to learn
at
who you are.
At
right?
least
before
for,
you get
for
involved
a few
in
reasons.
That.
At least, yeah, because, first of all, those relationships like that, when you have someone who's presenting a false front, whether he's, you know, and a man who is married and is gay, he's lying to himself. And, you know, it runs the gamut, like, you know, you have explained, to being not aware of it themselves, and then somebody might come clean, and that's less damaging than someone who completely denies it and blames the other person right to the end and is vindictive and blah, blah, blah. But either way, they're, you know, they're destructive, and especially also there are narcissistic tendencies in that as well.
Absolutely.
But those kinds of relationships, because in order for them to maintain their images or themselves or get their needs met, yours have to be destroyed. You know, you have to be destroyed in a sense. You're sacrificed. So, you become damaged. And another thing that happens that, you know, you mentioned caretaker types or those of us who tend to, they target people like that because, number one, those people will stay with them. You know, those people will take a lot of responsibility in the relationship. But there's something about, I don't know, this is just something, a theory I'm just kind of like tossing around. I've been learning about the freeze response in post-traumatic stress. You ever hear of the freeze response? I'm sure people
have heard of
fight or flight, right? When a person or an animal, a human being or an animal, is threatened with death or some, you know, severely threatened, you can run or you can fight, right? Now, what if you can't do either? Now, in the animal world, what they would do is play dead. Humans do the same thing. It's called the freeze response.
Exactly.
Now, as a child, that's the only thing you can do, pretty much, right? As a child, if you're in a bad situation where you're verbally abused, neglected, or whatever the case may be, or bullied, those kinds of things, you usually can't run because you need your parents to take care of you. You can't be too big, right? So what you do is kind of glaze over. You know, you kind of just freeze. You kind of bear through it, and that's called dissociation. It's almost like you take your mind somewhere else so you can get through it.
Exactly.
And I think that's what happens in a really bad relationship. You do that. You kind of do that dissociation thing. You're not really aware of it, but it's almost like you just put your mind somewhere else to get through it. And I think that's one of the reasons that you lose yourself. You know, you have to keep.
Well, I think it's also a matter. I agree with you totally, but I think also what women do is that they just, like you say, they just kind of tune out, turn off, and they just keep trying to keep the calm, to keep the peace. So they start giving into things that they normally may never have given into before, just because they don't feel like having that constant fight going on. So you become,
right.
you really lose who you are in yourself. I know in my own marriage, I became a total stranger to myself in a short amount of time, because when you have constant emotional pummeling and you try to stand up each time you get knocked down, then after a while you just stop getting up. You just stay down. It's just easier than to have the constant fight, right?
Right, and you give up your needs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Any needs you have just get buried. So when you're recovering from a bad relationship like this, there's a few things that you have to do. You have to grieve, right? And you're not necessarily grieving the person or grieving the difficulty, but you're grieving the dream, you know, the what you thought you had and what you've lost, you know, that. And then you have to rebuild yourself. And like you said, you're damaged. And there might be things else that you've never addressed. So it's really important to learn how to love yourself, to learn how to heal those wounds and connect to yourself and nurture yourself so that you come to know what love feels like, so that next time around you'll recognize it.
I think
because
also
if you never learn how to
women,
do that, you won't. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think many women who get into these relationships came from broken homes to start with, you know, where there was mental illness, drug abuse, alcoholism, where a number of my women have said to me that going to the marriages with their gay husbands, even though they didn't know they were gay, but even if they weren't perfect marriages, they were better than the situations they were in.
Right.
And they were kinder to the women than their home life was kind to them with their parents. So it was a way out for some of them, and they hoped that they could make it great. And so they came from broken surroundings to start with, and they go into something that breaks them down further. So I really do believe that some women don't even know who they are to start with. It's not even like regaining yourself back. It's first rebuilding your life and learning who you are and who you want to be.
It's like an opportunity to heal those wounds that you never healed.
I know. But, you know, they come out so needy sometimes from these marriages, and boy, do I understand that. You know, when you've gone through sexual rejection and emotional rejection, and you just want to feel like a woman again. And, you know, I tell women, you know, you can fool around, but, you know, it's really hard. You can't get, like, emotionally entangled with somebody. But a lot of times women just can't do that. You know, they feel like if they're going to fool around, they have to be, you know, with somebody. And they find themselves in a different kind of destructive relationship the next time. I see it happening so many times, Marianne. Do you see that, too?
Yeah.
Going from one destructive relationship to another?
Yeah, it's almost inevitable, because if you're in, like you said, you're in one destructive relationship, you may have been partly damaged before you got in that relationship, but after that relationship, you're going to be even more damaged. And you're going to you could end up with someone worse. So, yeah, you really have to work on that healing, as hard as that might be, to just really work on yourself and stay away from everyone and get support groups and do things that connect you to yourself.
You know, I'd like to ask you this question that maybe you could help women with. Can you, I mean, I say this, but, you know, maybe you could either confirm it or tell me if I'm wrong. Once a man's really established in behaviors such as narcissism and sociopathy, they don't change. You know,
I've never
I think
seen
that
it.
Women think they can fix them or change them. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, we don't really comprehend what these people are. You know, we don't. Mm-hmm. I hear this over and over, that people say, "I can't quite wrap my mind around the idea that this person is not capable of loving," or "I can't quite wrap my mind around the idea that this person has no conscience or doesn't care, incapable of caring or loving." It is. It's hard. It's a hard thing to really comprehend, because it's so foreign to us. You find people say that a lot, like it's,
a lot.
It's hard to believe.
Like,
yeah. But it is actually true. It's actually true. They are not capable of emotionally connecting to themselves. Therefore, they're not capable of emotionally connecting to you. And you can't love someone without empathy. You know what I mean? If you have
exactly,
if you can have emotions yourself, you're likely to be able to connect to another human being and empathize with them. But if you're if you're cut off from your own emotions, then you're not going to be able to empathize. And
but they know
I
how
think,
to pretend, right? They can put on that appearance that they love you and that you mean everything to them.
They can even fake empathy. And that's a little confusing to a lot of people, too, because people say, well, you know, he or she could empathize with the children or could empathize when the next-door neighbor needed help or empathize with someone who was or their buddy was having a problem. But that's different. If it's something that they can understand, they might be able to empathize a little bit. But when it comes to empathizing with you or being able to take care of you, or then for that for some reason, because I think that's very threatening to them, that, you know, if you need something from them or saying they're doing something wrong or hurting you, they can't admit that. They can't go there. So then they can't empathize with you.
Well, let me ask
you
this.
Kind of
I think that's
sort of empathize when it's nothing, you know, doesn't require anything from them.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think that sometimes the way I see these men is that they can be helpers for the momentary moment, but not for the long run because they don't have that kind of sustainability. But even when they're helping, it's because it makes them look good. In other words, they're not helping out of true care and concern for someone. They go and help, and then they have to brag about, oh, look what I did, because once again, it all leads back to them, right?
It makes them the hero. And
exactly.
I think the ones that are good parents, it's more like the children are an extension of them.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's very narcissistic. It's not so much that they truly can love. Yeah, I agree.
So what's your opinion with this? Is it nature versus nurture? How do people get like this?
Well, they have found that there are certain there's a certain biology. If you've ever read Women Who Love Sociopaths or by Sandra Brown and Dr. Leanne Leiden, I'm sorry, and also Dr. Leanne Leiden wrote a book called Just Like His Father. And she goes into a lot of research on this stuff. And there are people who are born with the a lower capacity to feel emotion.
Uh-huh.
And people who and also those people, a lot of them have impulsivity in their brain. And they call these people in research low to no conscience. Wait a minute, I'm sorry. Callous, unemotional, low to no conscience.
Uh-huh.
They kind of have that biology. However, they find that the environment is what most will bring that biology out or prevent it from coming out or you know, forming into a full-blown, you know, cold person, callous person. The environment is very key. You have to have them both.
I guess, you know, maybe that's why when you have children that come, two children who come from the same family, and one
mm-hmm.
totally goes astray while the other one becomes, you know, somebody who's a model citizen,
mm-hmm.
that maybe there was something there genetically predisposed versus if they both grew up with the same parents, with the same kind of parenting, good loving homes, but one goes astray, one doesn't.
Yeah, but the going astray would have to also do with the environment, you know, the relationship with the parents, or maybe something that happened outside of the home. You
mm-hmm.
know, maybe bullying, maybe sexual abuse, maybe learning
mm-hmm.
difficulties. Who knows, you know? But definitely
yeah.
it's not just genetic.
I think that makes people angry, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe
I
when they're angry, they want to strike back.
Yeah, I think when they're angry enough or have had enough abuse or humiliation as a child in different ways growing up, I think at some point people who become psychopathic, you know, cut off from
mm-hmm.
themselves, and this is kind of my theory. I believe they just come to a point where they don't ever want to be that victim again. They don't ever want to feel that pain again. And it's almost like they cut that part of themselves off and they kind of continue their personality or build their personality as an adult around control, feeling in control.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like rage always right under the surface, it seems. There's anger under there.
Do you think this would be applied to someone who's, for instance, like a cult leader?
Yes.
You know, who has to have control over everything?
Right. They're almost always psychopaths, yeah. Yeah.
And sociopaths with a lack of, you know, concern what kind of chaos they raise in people's lives. I think there are
right.
a lot of people like that who are out there who are very controlling. And they start off by being very charming, very, you know, seeming very loving, and they catch you. And
mm-hmm.
they get you into their nest, into their web of deceit. And
yeah.
then they go in for the lunge, right?
Right. Right. They
and,
just
you know,
do
one
it
of,
on a
one
group
of the articles,
level.
Oh, yeah. On a group level, I think mm-hmm. it's even worse because then you feel isolation and alone. If, you know, you try to get out of that group, you think there's something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
yeah,
another mentality altogether. But you
mm-hmm.
know, so much is going on. And even, you know, there's a show on television, I don't know if you've ever seen it, called The Following, Returns
no.
Tonight. But that's a really scary show with Kevin Bacon, who does an excellent job, about a cult leader, and it seems like so far removed, but you see so many people who are like this looking to believe in someone who can tell them what to do, even if it's bizarre,
mm-hmm.
but they just need to be controlled. And I guess that's who controlling people look for, right? People who need
yeah,
to be
well,
controlled.
Yeah, well, again, usually people who go into cults are in some vulnerable position in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Whether
and
they've lost a
the
job
or
come out of a bad
or
relationship.
Or come from a bad family. Yeah,
yep,
so they come
yep.
from bad families. And there's all these people. You know, it's just such a scary world out there. And I'm sure you run into it every single day.
Mm.
Sad stories.
Destructive relationships are like one man cult. or one
it's
woman
true.
Cult. Yeah.
And do you
it's
find
the,
women
it's the same dynamic.
Same dynamic. And do you find women who are just such in need of being with somebody so codependent that they're willing to even accept the next dysfunctional relationship rather than just be on their own?
Yeah, I know, yeah. Well, don't you think that has a lot to do with it? I mean, you know, one of the reasons that we women do that, or men too, and even stay in a relationship really long after they know it's really bad, is that...
Mm-hmm.
The devastation of number one, being alone and being sad, or the thing not working out, you know, a failure, you know, a failed relationship. It just, I don't think people want to face that.
Do you think we emphasize too much?
They don't want to face themselves.
I know
their own.
Yeah, I mean, I was growing up. You know, I'm older than you are. So I'm not sure about when you were, you know, growing up, but I grew up in that whole Cinderella era where
mm-hmm.
life was, you know, aimed to be a fairy tale of living happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
And happily ever after was equated with being wanted by a man who you would spend the rest
yeah.
of your life, who would be a prince to you and you'd be the princess and you'd have these wonderful children and a happy home. And I think so many of us made that our goal, you know, because
uh-huh.
without that, then it didn't validate you as a woman. You know,
right,
we used to
right.
play this game when I was growing up. I don't know, they still have it, called Old Maid. Do you remember that game?
Yeah, it was
a card game.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and, you know, the old maid was the one who was left all alone. I mean, they started putting these things in
right.
our heads every time we were children,
the
all
maid.
These messages. Right, the old maid game. And so nobody wanted to be that last one standing and be the old maid. So a lot of people would jump into relationships based on the fact that they thought everything will work out regardless if it was totally unrealistic or not. But do you think
right.
it's changed
it was,
today?
It was like magical. You know, if you got the right person, your life would be happy, happy ever after. I know.
No, I think if you got, no, I grew up thinking if I got any person, it would be fine. Not just the magical person. I just wanted anybody who would want me. And that
was
always my biggest fear. Would somebody ever want me? Because I think that we grew up not feeling validated as women unless somebody really wanted us.
That's very true, Bonnie. Very true.
Mm-hmm.
I had a little bit, maybe a similar fantasy, but also the fantasy of wanting to create a family, you know, to make up for the one that I didn't have, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted a happier family than the one I grew up in.
Right.
And it was happy for quite a while there. It wasn't bad, but that's not the right reason, and it's not based in reality, you know, because
right.
life is just not
like
that.
But I think
like
that's, you know, the mistake we make being young, but maybe the messages today are better for women to be independent, not having to jump into things. You know, I'm hoping that women are growing up
yeah.
and teaching their daughters better lessons than what I learned. You know,
yes.
I have a note that came in from one of our listeners who wanted to ask you a question. It
mm-hmm.
said, Bonnie, can you please ask Marianne if a closeted gay man living a lie has more of a tendency to be narcissistic?
Yeah.
That's from my girlfriend, Grace.
That's what I would say, yes. I mean,
mm-hmm.
living a lie is deceitful, right? It's that somebody who's doing that to meet their own need for their image, their cover, whatever. And
mm-hmm.
it's narcissistic in the way that it doesn't take your needs into consideration. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter that this is hurting you or that you're being deceived. So, yes, that would be narcissistic.
Mm-hmm.
Whether,
you know,
that,
we have a lot of...
That person might not have, you know, what's called narcissistic personality disorder, you know, like full-blown narcissism, but it is narcissistic.
Right.
People
challenge us on using that. People challenge us a lot on the words that we use on here, like narcissism, sociopathic, mm-hmm. you know, stating that, well, people who don't agree with us, I meant, that it's making a very mm-hmm. big leap to call somebody that. But, you know, those are behaviors that people do exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you can actually use the whole label, but I do call it as I see it. That when somebody has that lack of empathy or they put their needs before yours or think of you first.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to live a double life in itself, you know, I think that when you become a liar and you lie every single day of your life, that after a while you start believing your lies, I think that really
yeah.
does contribute to having sociopathic behavior. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it. A person who lies every day of their lives if they come to believe it. Yeah.
Well,
sociopath.
Yeah, I
mm-hmm.
think you can really convince yourself if you repeat a lie enough, then you're going to start to believe that lie.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happens in many of these cases. You know, men who are living with our women, a lot of them are living, well, they're pretty much all living a lie. And it's one thing to compartmentalize, because I know that people can do that, not to, you know, without that much trouble. But this
mm-hmm.
is compartmentalizing, like, a whole double life. I mean, it's not like a little thing here, a little thing there. This is, like, who you are.
Right.
And the
it's
men
like,
are out there having another life that has nothing to do with their life at home.
That's right. And somehow they make it okay in their own mind. They rationalize it. Yeah, when you say lying every day of their lives so that they believe it, so they have to feel okay about it, in other words. So they have to believe their lies. They have to believe that maybe the reason that their marriage isn't good is because of the woman is just, you know, she badgers. That's really the
well,
reason.
Well, you know, that's the
part.
Whole thing. And, you know, I had a gentleman who I'm working with, you know, I wrote about this last month in my newsletter,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, he said to me, do I really have to tell my wife? Is it really necessary? We, you know, we have a bad marriage anyway, and we would be probably getting divorced anyway. You know,
mm-hmm.
why would I have to tell her, you know, that I'm gay? Because that would make it so much worse, and I'd have to end up paying so much more money in a divorce case. And even my children, this is the part I really did not like at all, even my children, who were grown adult children now, said, I don't know how you live with her. And if you would leave her, we certainly wouldn't blame you. And it just got me so angry. And I said to him, you know what? I said, you know, maybe your wife and you do not have a good marriage, but if you want to tell me for 1 minute this has nothing to do with you being gay, I said, then you're really lying to yourself. It has everything to do with it.
Of course,
you don't want to be with the woman you love and you're pulling away.
Right. Well, those reasons that he gave you were all self-serving. I might not get enough money. You know, why did she have to know? Because he's not letting her know, because that kind of gets him off the hook and allows her to think it's her fault. You know, it's totally self-serving.
Well, that's
to be
what
honest.
He was doing.
Right.
Right. He was trying to make it her fault, and that's what these guys do. You know, and what really upsets me is that about 20% of all these gay men, and there's, you know, like 4 million of them who marry us, about 20% of states will go back and get married again and do this to another woman.
How many percent? What percent?
About 20%.
Oh, my God.
We'll have recurring marriages over and over again. And, of course, they'll never be honest about it. And here's the interesting dynamic. You know, like if you want to go and you want to tip someone off and tell them, look, you know, I left him because he's gay, and now you're going to have the same problem. Of course, he goes first and tells this woman, well, my ex-wife is crazy. She said all kinds of horrible things and accusations at me. How could I possibly be gay? I was married to her and had children. Now I'm going with you. You know, so they already start that whole process of what I call gay lighting, which is like gaslighting. But, they make the ex-wife the crazy one.
Right.
So it's really...
Well, they're crazy because of the gay lighting, right?
Right. Exactly.
You hear that lot in destructive relationships, that for some women, it just puts them over the edge. There's so much craziness in the relationship and rejection and distancing and blaming that.
And making you lose, that's right, and making you lose who you think you are. I mean, you know, I had a very emotionally destructive relationship with my ex-husband, and a very controlling one, and I just know that whoever I became wasn't who I started out to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to place blame, and you know what? I was a suspicious housewife, and I was always checking everything with him. I check his pockets. You know, we didn't have internet back then and computerization. So, you know, back in those days, I just had to do old-fashioned checking of everything, because once you catch somebody in a lie, then, you know, you never can trust again, especially when it seems like the lies keep going on.
Yeah.
And then he would blame me for being, you know, how dare you go through my things? I can't have any privacy, you know, but you turn into somebody. I wouldn't have been like that to start with. So you just get knocked down further and further in these relationships.
Absolutely.
And they're so unhealthy. I always tell women you're not helping your children either.
No.
How about the children, Marianne? I need you to talk about the children, what it does to children when they're growing up in these self-destructive relationships. Because I always say women need to get out.
Yeah, they do. The children, it seems like, are either made allies by the bad guy, the bad partner, or they're just exposed to a lot of chaos and abuse and lack of love in the marriage. It's terrible. Terrible for the children.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it really upsets me when women say
often.
There's... Right, but I get upset when women say they're staying because of their children. Can you address that?
They stay because of their children?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, I think there's probably a lot of guilt involved in breaking up a marriage and taking what is assumed to be the security of a marriage and causing a divorce. And I think people are very reluctant to do that to their children. And they hang in there and keep thinking and convincing themselves that they're going to make it better, or that, you know, maybe this time when we go to therapy, or maybe, you know, things are going well right now, they're going to stay okay, or maybe I can just hold on, or maybe I can do something else to make the relationship better. You know, I think women will do anything that they possibly can think of before they admit to themselves that it's just really bad and there's only one way out. And then going out, you know, involves making a living, being independent,
mm-hmm.
having to do everything alone. I think people are afraid of that as well. And then having to admit that you've lost your dream, that it's all been a sham. Just a lot of painful stuff. But, of course, if you can, the earlier you figure that out, get the kids out, the better for the kids. But do you
I
find
agree.
That people do that? Doesn't it usually take years and years before people finally get to that point?
Not necessarily. You know, it's a matter that, I really strongly encourage women. I like to cut to the chase. I don't believe
mm-hmm.
in trying to make something work that's not workable. I mean,
right.
this is not like a marriage where you have normal kinds of problems. These are abnormal kinds of problems.
Right.
And I would never advise, like, if a woman came to me and told me that she was with somebody who was, abusing her with domestic violence,
mm-hmm.
there's no way I would tell her try to make that relationship work.
Oh, no.
I would tell her.
Of course not.
So to
yeah.
me, this is the same thing. It's a destructive
mm-hmm.
marriage. No good's going to come from it. There's
mm-hmm.
You can't fix what's wrong in this marriage. So
mm-hmm.
you need to really start strengthening yourself. I'm not saying you have to walk out that day. I always tell women, have a plan. Make sure you
mm-hmm.
know what your rights are with an attorney. If
mm-hmm.
you have to stay there for the time being, go to school, get educated so you can support yourself. But you can't in your mind say, just keep putting it off and saying this is going to go away. It's not going to go away. And then you have to always worry if you're having sexual relations with your husband, which most women aren't because their husbands don't want to. But
right.
some do.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to get a sexually transmitted disease because a large number of our women have sexually transmitted diseases.
Yeah.
And they've gotten them from their husbands. And, this is whether it's, something like herpes or whether it's HIV or anything in between from gonorrhea to syphilis or crabs or whatever it is, and the husbands
mm-hmm.
very rarely ever take responsibility for it. They'll blame their wives instead. I mean, it's just amazing how everything
yes,
gets so
amazing.
Twisted and distorted.
Yep.
So what is the point? So I strongly encourage women from the very first time we get together on our emails to start making a plan because this is not something that's workable.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that when you're married to a sociopath or a narcissist, I don't see good coming out of that. Do you?
No, there's
I mean,
no
I could be
good.
Wrong.
No, there's no good. But there's this what is called cognitive dissonance that happens that seems to keep women in those kinds of relationships maybe longer than if the husband was gay, because that's once you find that out, it's just more cut and dry.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing, it's like because they can be so charming and say all the right things and
mm-hmm.
do things like, go into therapy and engage in the therapy for a while or just, be on their best behavior and really look like things are changing. And, of course, then you have women who don't understand that a person like that cannot change, so they have hope, So it could go on
mm-hmm.
for a little longer in that situation, but it's inevitable that, self-destruct. Even
well,
when
don't worry, it goes on plenty long
in therapy. Like you say, they can't sustain it.
Yeah, but believe me, it goes on plenty with women with gay husbands, too, because, people just don't understand homosexuality. And, husbands will start using this saying to them, listen, I'm not gay. I was just very badly abused as a child, and that's why I'm having these thoughts. I would say many of the men use this as their premise of why they're acting, having these gay impulses, which
mm-hmm.
is ridiculous. I mean, it has nothing to do with they were abused so they became gay. I mean, they were gay to start with, and that's not to negate they were abused. No doubt
right.
they were. But
right.
it didn't make them gay. But they're looking for a reason not to be gay. And
mm-hmm.
women want to believe it because who wants to break up a family? So
exactly.
when your husband tells you, like, I prayed to God and now it's gone, believe it or not, people do believe that. They're religious and they think that God can cure anything and God will cure
mm-hmm.
this. This was a choice and you can change your choice.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of women who stay in much longer than they need to. But I do see, I do run a support group now for the adult children of gay fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been an amazing experience learning what these young adults or older adults have gone through in these marriages. And it's really painful, the pain that they've gone through growing up like this, knowing that there's a secret in their family and not knowing exactly what it is, or just knowing that their parents' interaction wasn't correct, or, you know, there was no affection or, you know, outward displays in their family, or not having the proper kind of role modeling because the gay father wasn't making an emotional connection to his son. I mean, there's questioning their own sexuality, questioning what's real in a relationship, what's not real. When their father was upset, was it really with them, or was it the fact he was frustrated because he wasn't where he belonged? A lot of issues that are coming out, you know, from learning and more. And I'm sure it happens with kids who don't have gay fathers. You know, I have a father who's a sociopath of the worst imaginable kind. You know, he has 5 children, has no relationship with any of us, and he's not gay, he's straight. So, you know, this happens along the line anywhere, but he always kind of lacked a social conscience. You know, he would start fires and have no thoughts about it. You know, he was destructive in all of our relationships, taught us really bad kinds of principles and stuff. And so when you grow up and you grow up with this kind of confusion and distortion, you know, I think it's really hard to distinguish what really is real and what's not real in any kind of situation when you have parents.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you grow up in a situation like that with, you know, what you just described, or gay parents that no one is really talking about, you know, it's all deceptive and hidden. You know, the kids still know that. They know they can feel that. Kids can feel that strange dynamic, whatever it is. And then I would imagine that when they go into relationships, they would be much more likely to get into a relationship where the person is false in some way. This person is not really there, wouldn't you say?
I'm not sure about that. I think they just don't know how to have relationships because of the fact that I'm mostly working with people who do find out at some point, even later after they grow up. But no matter when they find out, it seems the older they get and the less they know. When they do find out, that's harder even yet, because now they look back at the relationship their parents had. You know, there's different dynamics. One that I like the least is when a child knows and they're the keeper of the secret and the guilt that they are torn with.
Oh,
I've had a lot of teenagers who had found out they found gay porn on the computer, or they found texts on their father's phones, or they caught their fathers, and the fathers would say, well, don't tell your mother, you know, if you do, she won't understand, it'll only hurt her, and this will be our secret, and, you know, I love your mother.
Burden.
Oh, my God,
poor kids.
I know, and then when the mother does find out, you know, then they have to feel that all those, she's brokenhearted, so a lot of issues. But I think that kids in general, regardless whether it's a gay father or straight father, when you come from a dysfunctional family and your parents do not get along because one's a sociopath, like in the case of my father, you know, you always feel like you've done something wrong, that, you know, my father doesn't love me, or, you know, I can never be good enough for him, you know, I can never make him happy, he's always finding fault with me. So the child takes on that responsibility. Do you find that?
Oh, absolutely. That's what children do. Children always blame themselves. They always think that they're doing something wrong when their parents are like that. That's the only thing a child can do, you know, because the alternative would be for the child to think that my parent is not capable of loving me or caring for me. And that would just be devastating. A child needs a parent's love to survive. I think also, you think, Bonnie, when you're raised like that, you take that into the next, you know, into an adult relationship, and that's what would make you more susceptible to taking the responsibility for everything.
Exactly. Now, as a therapist,
if I was just better, this person will love me. So let me try to be better, you know, or if I just take the blame, or if I just be good.
Or maybe women think if they came from a destructive family, well, you know, I wasn't, you know, my father didn't love me or my mother didn't love me, so I know that I wasn't that good then, and now I'm with somebody who's also telling me I'm not good. And they really personalize something that's not there to be personalized at all. It's just repeating the pattern again and again by picking the wrong people to be with.
Well, it's familiar. We go toward what's familiar.
Uh-huh.
But what else would we normally, if that's the kind of, quote, love we grew up with, that's what we know of love. So we gravitate toward that in an adult relationship. And we
that's
gravitate toward someone who can't love us and then try to get them to love us, even though that's totally not conscious. Yeah,
right.
You're right.
Well, I always tell women
the same thing.
I call it to women, I call it my monkey see, monkey do, monkey act just like you syndrome. That whatever you came from, whatever you saw, you're going to repeat that, and so will your children. This will be a generational mistake that you keep making over and over and over again, unless somebody says stop the insanity and let's get healthy.
Yeah.
You know, let's not have to live with this anymore. And that's what you do.
Yes.
You help people get healthy, correct?
Yes. And I was just kind of going back to what you said at the beginning, that when a person, you know, crashes and burns and comes out of a terrible relation, a deceptive relationship like this, it's an opportunity to break the cycle by healing those wounds that go all the way back, the damage from the current relationship and everything that's all tied in there, to learn how to really love yourself, to learn how to really nurture and take care and find yourself and all that stuff, that will break the cycle. And it even will affect your children, you know, because they've been damaged too, but you being able to love yourself and loving them going forward is all very, very good for them. It's reparative. It can help them to heal as well.
You know, we were talking before the show about something very interesting that you're working on now, a specific app that people could get. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I am almost finished with an app. It's a therapeutic app, and it has to do with being able to become more self-aware on a daily basis, because brain scientists, I'm sure you've heard the word neuroplasticity from those Luminosity commercials, you know. Neuroplasticity is the opening of new neural pathways in the brain, and that's how the brain changes, how the brain can heal, how it can override some of the wiring, the hard wiring that we grow up with and the damage that might be done. So in order to build neuroplasticity to affect change, you have to really focus on it a lot. You have to put a lot of focused attention on it daily. And become mindful and self-aware. So going to therapy and getting support and all that stuff is good, but this app would be a tool for you to do it on, in a more kind of directed and focused way. And what it does is focuses a lot on triggers. Triggers are, it could be a post-traumatic stress trigger, or it could be just a trigger when you have a strong reaction to something. It triggers just like a strong, sudden reaction to something that really is something that's coming from our past into the present and a launching out of our memory or our subconscious. So let's say something happens in your relationship and you go into this sudden, very painful place. One of the things the app does is get you in touch with the different what that trigger feels like. In other words, to connect to yourself in that moment, emotionally, your thoughts, your body sensations, what it might remind you of from your past. But the self-awareness then can help you to take action. There are places in the app that then direct you to take action for whatever you might need in that moment. And weirdly, even when you connect to yourself in a negative feeling, you're still connecting to yourself. So you're still, in a weird way, building yourself or building your sense of self back. And then the app will direct you, and there are a lot of positive ways to address whatever need you might need in that moment or other moments. And then there are places to prepare for your day with guided visualizations, kind of focusing on the things you want to be aware of, how you want to be during that day. There's a weekly review spot, a screen with different things. There's a history where you can everything is archived, and if you're working with a therapist, there's an email feature where you can email your inputted information to your therapist if you want to help the therapist work with you.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's it. Is that it? Oh, and there's a lifestyle goal screen with different links and ideas to help you with goals for health, you know, diet, exercise, body care, spirituality, things like that.
Uh-huh.
So that's basically, I hope it made sense.
Well, for younger people, it probably did. But, you know, when I hear the word app right away, I don't even know what that means. But, okay. Is it something you have, like, on a modern-day kind of phone-ish kind of thing?
Yeah. It's being built for iOS, which is iPhone and iPad. There's not an Android.
Yeah. Something I don't
not
know
an Android
about.
Build
okay.
yet. Hopefully there
people
will be
tell
an
me
Android
about my...
build.
I have what they call a stupid phone. So, you know, I'm not familiar with all these applications. But I know that I'm out of date, and most people are not, so I think it's great. How will people know when it's available? Will it be on your website?
Yeah, I'll put it on my website. I'll send the information if you like.
It'll
be on the app.
I'll
send you information of when it's on the app, and then people can look for it on their own.
Right. Well, if you send it to me, I'll be happy to put it in my newsletter so everybody will know that it's available. You can write up a little something about it.
Thank you, Bonnie. That's very kind of you.
Ah, don't be silly.
Thank
I'm happy
much.
To do it. I see how many people that you help and women in our network who say how wonderful you are. So I want to remind people that even if you don't live in New Jersey near Mary Ann, you can still, you know, be involved in her support group online. And
mm-hmm.
that's correct from wherever you are, right?
That's correct.
You know, you
now,
don't have
do
to be
you
local.
Find
you
one
could
of
be
the
anywhere.
Questions. Something that some people have contacted me from different parts of the country, one person from South Africa, wanting to start their own support group. I don't know if you have people doing this, Bonnie. And, you know, I'll just send them a few materials, but I'd like to get together a group book for people who'd like to do that, who have no, you know, who'd like to have a live group in their area. You have people doing for you?
I try to get people, you know, like if there's somebody from out of the country. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I have online support chat for people in Europe and from, European countries. Yeah, I do.
Oh,
every
fantastic.
Tuesday, that's called my international chat. We have women from the United Kingdom, from Ireland, one from Finland, you know, South Africa. So they do have the opportunity to at least chat that way and sometimes meet each other, you know, when I can get people from those areas, Australia, their support
uh-huh.
groups. So I do try to reach out that way for anybody who needs help.
Wow, buddy, you're doing such good work. That's so great. Unbelievable.
Well, there definitely is a need for it because, unfortunately, there's millions of us all over the world who are in this situation of confusion and destruction, and I'm just so happy that I'm able to help show the light to people who, this is such a unique situation, you know, having a gay husband, and yet, you know, there's millions of people who are going through it, but you always feel so isolated and alone. And
so
I think
true.
That's very true of the women you're working with who also, you know, are involved with people who have sociopathic tendencies or narcissistic tendencies who are living with them who also they feel so isolated, they can't say anything, they're afraid it's going to get back, it's going to create problems, people get angry. Do you find a lot of these guys isolate the women they're with? Because I find that.
Yes, a lot.
Get them away
a
from,
lot.
Right?
And another reason, yes, definitely. And another reason it's isolating is because there's a lot of shame involved, don't you think? Like, you know,
absolutely.
My God, look, when I've been married to a gay man all these years, how can I tell people this? Or I'm in this relationship where this person is cheating or they're abusive or they're horrible. And how am I, you know, what was I thinking? Why didn't I see the signs, you know, all of that? And plus, other people don't really understand it. They don't quite understand it. They don't even, it's hard enough to understand when you're in it.
But do you also feel that with the women you're working with who don't have gay husbands, it's very much the same also? They, you know, their husbands who have, you know, who are sociopaths, they try to isolate them from friends.
Absolutely.
And from their family.
Absolutely.
So they can just have them for themselves.
Yeah, so they can control them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think it's all about. You know, it's all about control. So,
and also because they have a lot to hide, you know. They'd rather, well, it depends on what type of person. Some of them are just so charming and can, are easy, you know, can socialize very easily. But most of them, I think, would rather be hidden.
Sometimes I think women just love too. I think women love too much sometimes, don't you?
Absolutely.
I know. I don't think it's necessarily something that's good all the time.
No, well, by love too much, you mean that they take too much responsibility.
No, they just fall in love and they just don't want to give it up. You know, they don't want to have to, you know.
Oh, you mean like they're in love with love?
Well, they really do love these men no matter what. And I always say, you know, why do you love them? You know, there has to be some kind of basis other than just this feeling of obligation, responsibility, and being in love. You know, there should be more to it.
Oh, I know what you're saying. Yeah, because women, they attach.
Codependency, I guess, a lot of it, right?
Well, a lot of it's codependency. But also, I think in situations like this, whether it's a sociopath or a gay husband, you still attach, you love the person, but you don't realize that the other person is not experiencing your relationship in the same way. You think they're feeling the same thing you are.
Mm-hmm.
So you fully put your heart out there. You fully, you know, you love like you're supposed to love.
All sad situations, but thankfully you're there to help women with this, Marianne. And I just want to remind everyone, you know, straight to my website. Look on the right-hand side. You'll see all of Marianne's information there. You can also join her online support group that way, you know, or write to her about any other issues you're having. And you do counseling through Skype also. Is that correct?
Yes.
So you could be anywhere in the world and still have the opportunity to have some wonderful counseling and support to get to your next step in your life, which is finding out who you are so you can move into some kind of positive relationship. And so that you don't have to move to your next toxic one or self-destructive one to change some of your ways so that you can, like I say, go and find the true, authentic life that you're looking for. So, Marianne, I want to thank you so much for being part of our network. You know, you're always so refreshing for women to hear.
My great pleasure, Bonnie. Thank you.
Yeah, hopefully in the spring I can call on you again to come back. By that time, hopefully
Absolutely.
Your app will be working. And we'll talk more about that.
All
right.
Thank
you. So to all of our listeners, I wish you a wonderful week. If you have any questions, just email me. Yeah, and Marianne, thank you so much. You're always so interesting with what you bring to us and making us feeling hopeful. All right, everybody, have a wonderful week. Always hope.
Bye-bye.
Yep, never give up, right?
That's right.
Okay, good. All right, everybody, have a wonderful week and be here with you next week. Bye-bye now. Bye, Marianne.
Bye-bye.